Hello and welcome to today's press call. There will be prepared remarks and a Q&A to follow. To ask a question after the prepared remarks conclude, please press star one. Now I'd like to turn the call over to Andrea Saul, who will kick this off.
Hi everyone. Thank you for joining us for the fifth edition of our Community Standards Enforcement Report. Today on the call, you'll hear from Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, Vice President of Integrity Guy Rosen, Chief Technology Officer Mike Schoepfer, Vice President of Content Policy Monica Bickert, and Vice President of Product at Instagram Vishal Shah. And then we'll open up the call for questions. This call is on the record. With that, I'll go ahead and kick it over to Mark. Mark?
All right. Thanks, Andrea. And hey, everyone, and thanks for joining today. I hope you're all doing okay and staying healthy and safe as we all navigate this COVID-19 pandemic. Today, we're publishing our fifth transparency report, outlining how we're doing at finding and removing harmful content. This report covers the period of October 2019 through March 2020. So that was mostly before we saw the largest impacts from COVID-19. Guy Rosen, our Vice President of Integrity, who runs all of our product and engineering teams in that area, is going to take you through more of the details of this report in just a few minutes. But before we dive into that, I wanted to discuss a few topics up front, how we're addressing COVID content specifically, how this crisis is affecting our overall content moderation work, and some thoughts on the Independent Oversight Board's announcement last week of its initial 20 members. So let's start with COVID-19. Since the early days of this outbreak, we knew that we were going to have a big role in connecting people with accurate information from trusted sources. So we so far have directed more than 2 billion people to resources from health authorities through our COVID Information Center and other inline educational pop-ups across Facebook and Instagram. We've taken some of the steps here we've never taken before to address any kind of crisis, including putting a permanent banner on the top of everyone's Facebook app for more than a month now, directing people to this information center. We even made the COVID Information Center a tab in the Facebook app. So if you go there frequently, like I do, to check on the most recent stats for new cases in different geographic areas, then this COVID-19 Information Center can fill one of your limited navigation tab slots in the app. Now, beyond connecting people with high-quality information, we also have an important responsibility to limit the spread of misinformation through our services. And we look at this type of misinformation in two categories. There is harmful misinformation that could put people in imminent physical danger, so we remove it completely. And then there's broader misinformation that we don't remove, but instead we work with independent fact-checkers to limit its spread across our services. And in the past couple of months, we've removed hundreds of thousands of pieces of harmful misinformation, which includes content claiming that something is scientifically proven to be a cure for coronavirus, or saying that the virus isn't real. We partnered with health authorities around the world to identify what type of misinformation risks real danger. And having guidance from those independent experts has been very helpful for our policy and enforcement teams in acting here. For other types of misinformation, we work with independent fact checkers to display warning labels. And in April alone, we put about 50 million labels on pieces of content related to COVID-19 based on 7,500 articles by independent fact-checking partners. And we have a good sense that these warning labels work because 95% of the time that someone sees content with a label, they don't click through to view that content. We originally launched this independent fact-checking program about 4 years ago, with 15 partners covering 4 languages, and it's evolved quite a bit since then. Today, we have more than 60 fact-checking partners covering more than 50 different languages around the world. We've also used machine learning to put in automated systems that can detect and downrank and remove misinformation before it goes viral based on signals from these partners. And the investments that we've made in recent years have definitely helped us to prepare for this moment, and in turn, they've also given us a chance to refine our approach and experiment with new tactics for fighting misinformation as well. Now, beyond misinformation, we are seeing an increased prevalence of other types of COVID-related content that tries to exploit the crisis for financial gain. So since March 1st, we've removed more than 2.5 million pieces of content, including for the sale of masks, hand sanitizers, disinfecting wipes, and COVID test kits. And the challenge here is that for everyone trying to exploit the situation, there are also a lot of people who are actually trying to help get masks and other equipment to people who really need it. So it can sometimes be hard to detect what's a fraudulent sale that we should stop and what's a real well-intentioned offer to help. And we have started to rely on computer vision technology that we've been building up over the years to find and remove drug sales to work here. And we're going to keep working hard to take down exploitative sales related to COVID-19 as well. Next, I want to talk for a bit about how our content moderation work has been impacted by COVID-19. Now, as you know, we generally find and remove content that violates our community standards through a combination of automated systems and human review. And in mid-March, we worked with our partners to send our content reviewers home in order to keep them safe with the growing outbreak. And this made the human review part of our enforcement much more difficult. So at first, we shifted our review work to a smaller number of full-time employees who were also working from home. And since then, we've worked with some of our partners to allow a majority of contractors doing content review to do their work from home too. And we've had to do this carefully to make sure that we could protect the privacy of people in our community while reviewers were working from home, and also to make sure that we can put in place the appropriate safeguards to take care of the mental health and well-being of these reviewers while they're remote. And as countries around the world have begun to reopen, we have started allowing some reviewers back into offices on a voluntary basis. And we're going to continue this process in a safe way, and we'll continue following all national and local guidance on that front. Now, since we have a reduced workforce, we're prioritizing reviewing certain types of content, like child safety, suicide and self-injury, terrorism, and harmful misinformation related to COVID, to make sure that we're handling the most dangerous issues. We're also relying more on our automated system to detect and remove violating content and to disable accounts. And our machine learning technology here has come a long way in recent years, and we're able to catch a lot of this harmful content. We're now able to find almost 90% of hate speech that we take down on Facebook before it's even reported to us. That's up from just 24% when we released our first of these reports in 2018, and up from roughly 0% a year before that. On Instagram, we are proactively catching about 90% of posts that we take down related to suicide and self-harm, and that's up from 78% last year. And our Chief Technology Officer, Mike Schrepfer, is joining this call today to talk more about how AI is helping us find and remove content that breaks our rules. But I just want to say that I'm quite proud of the work that our teams have done to build up these systems over the past few years. It's allowed us to identify more harm proactively and keep our community safe, including now in the face of a global pandemic. That said, I know our systems aren't perfect, and they still need to improve. Our effectiveness has certainly been impacted by having less human review during COVID-19, and we do unfortunately expect to make more mistakes until we're able to ramp everything back up. And since today's report only covers through March, it doesn't reflect the full impact of the changes that we've seen and had to make during the pandemic. So we do expect to see more of an impact in the next report. And as a specific example, since we have fewer people reviewing content, we've prioritized doing a first review of more severe reports over doing a second review and appeal of other types of content. So we expect the number of appeals to be much lower in our next report. As another example, in order to focus on actually removing harmful content, we've temporarily deprioritized and stopped sampling and labeling content for measurement. So for this report, we're not including some of the prevalence metrics for March, and we may not be able to calculate the prevalence of violating content until we have more reviewers back online. Through this pandemic and beyond, we're going to continue reporting our effectiveness and we'll remain transparent with our results. And I want to stress this because in a crisis, there can often be a tendency to put your head down and turn inwards, and we're not going to do that. We're going to keep sharing these reports, even if some of our numbers dip in some places. Because as I've said, I believe that transparency in how we're handling the safety of our community is as important as the reports that we make on our quarterly earnings. Now, the last area that I want to discuss today is the Independent Oversight Board's announcement this week of its first 20 members. As you know, the Oversight Board will rule on some of the most significant and challenging decisions that we face around what can and cannot be shared across our services. This is going to add an important level of appeals, as well as accountability and scrutiny to the content enforcement work that we're talking about today. The first 20 members who will serve on this board bring diverse backgrounds, ideas, and experiences, including as former judges, former prime minister, NGO leaders in a number of countries, journalists, and academics. But one thing they all have in common is a strong belief in the importance of giving people voice and free expression. The Oversight Board is going to have the power to overturn decisions that we've made on content, as long as they comply with local laws. Their decisions are going to be final and binding, even if I or anyone else at the company disagree with them. So by establishing this Oversight Board, we're attempting to engage in the fragile but important process of independent institution building. I am making a public commitment and putting a stake in the ground that will help keep us true to our values and make it that much harder for me or whoever else runs this company down the line to back away from these principles. Now, it's still early, and my hope is that if this is working well, then we're going to be able to expand the Oversight Board's charter as well. But it's worth noting that this structure really is a first of its kind. I don't think it's something that any other company has done before, and I think that it's an important step to make sure that people will always continue having voice and staying safe on our platform. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Guy to dive a bit deeper into all the numbers that we're sharing today.
Thanks, Mark, and good morning, everyone. I'd like to walk you all through some highlights from this fifth edition of our report. I'll call out two updates that we've made in this edition. Firstly, we're including more data on Instagram. We're adding 5 new policy areas, as well as data on appeals on Instagram. Now, Facebook and Instagram use the same reporting tools, detection systems, review systems, measurement infrastructure, and we have one central team responsible for developing solutions that span across our services. Historically, some of these systems were built for Facebook first and later applied to other services. This means that in some of the areas, you might see the systems are further ahead on Facebook than they are in Instagram, and at times that may be reflected in the metrics in this report. The second addition is we're adding data here on our efforts to combat organized hate. This is across both Facebook and Instagram. And so in total, the report now covers 12 policy areas on Facebook and 10 on Instagram. Now, I'd like to walk through 3 key metrics that the report covers: prevalence, content action, and proactive rate. The first and perhaps the most important metric is prevalence. In other words, that is, how much bad content did people actually see? We periodically sample the content that is viewed on our services, and we review it to statistically calculate what percent violates our policies. And if something like that was seen by someone, it means we didn't take it down, or perhaps we took it down, but we got to it too slowly. And importantly, we focus on how much content is seen, not just how much sheer content is out there that violates our rules. For some of the policy areas, especially those that address the most severe safety concerns, the likelihood that people view content that violates these policies is extremely low. When we sample content, that people viewed to measure prevalence, for these areas, we might not find any violating samples at all. And so for those cases, we statistically calculate an upper limit. That means in order for us to find little to no samples, the actual likelihood of seeing this content is between zero and this limit. In this report, that upper limit is 0.05% for all of these violations across both Facebook and Instagram, except for one area on Instagram, which is higher in Q1 due to how we counted content that we removed related to the death of Iranian Major General Qassem Soleimani. Monica will share more about how that incident manifested on our services. The second metric is how much content we took action on. This includes removing content, applying a warning screen or disabling accounts, and it reflects how often people violate our policies and how much of it we identified. It also means that it can fluctuate a lot. For instance, if we find and remove a handful of viral memes that violate our hate policy, that might drive the number up one quarter, and then the number can drop the next quarter if people no longer try to share those memes. The number can also go up as we expand our systems to proactively detect harmful content. And you can see an example in this increase, for example, in drug sale content on Facebook, where in Q4 of 2019, we removed 8.8 million pieces of content. That's up from 4.4 million the prior quarter. That's a result of improved detection. Now, the third metric is proactive rate. This typically reflects how effective AI is in a particular policy area, as it shows how much of the content that we took action on was detected by our systems before someone reported the content to us. For hate speech, we continue to expand proactive detection technology. We added more languages and improved the existing detection systems. And the detection rate, the proactive detection rate for hate speech increased by more than 8 points over the past three quarters and almost 20 points in the last year. As a result, we're now able to find more content and we detect almost 90% of the hate speech content that we remove on Facebook before people report it to us. We've made progress on this, but we know we have more work to do, including on Instagram, where that same proactive rate for hate is at 44%, and we're continuing to work on it. To talk more about our progress on AI, I'll now turn it over to Shrett.
Thanks, Guy. AI is our best tool for keeping users safe at scale. Billions of pieces of content are uploaded to Facebook every day. We use AI to screen each piece in hundreds of milliseconds to make sure content that violates our standards doesn't get posted. It's an incredibly different task done at massive scale against adversaries who are constantly working to evade our systems. As Mark mentioned, one of our top priorities during this time is to connect people to accurate information from health experts and keep harmful misinformation about COVID-19 from spreading on our apps, an area where AI is playing a crucial role. We're using AI to understand if someone is offering or requesting help in a public post so we can get in front of them, in front of the local community via the COVID Information Help Hub. We also know that misinformation labels work, but the challenge is the adversarial nature of this work. People are uploading slight different variations of images designed to evade our systems. To address this, we shipped a new technology called Sim Search Net. When a piece of content has been labeled by our independent third-party fact-checking partners as misinformation, this technology can detect near-perfect matches. For instance, when someone has altered it to try to bypass our systems. It's reviewing billions of photos every day to find copies of false or misleading information that's already been debunked. Using AI to detect these matches enables these partners to focus on new instances of misinformation rather than near identical variations of things they've already seen. In addition to SimSearchNet, to help us improve the ability to detect and remove bad ads and commerce listings for medical face masks, hand sanitizer, surface disinfecting wipes, and COVID-19 testing kits, we quickly developed a system using local image features to match similar images to prevent people from avoiding detection by cropping or altering photos and ads. As Guy mentioned, we're also making rapid progress using AI to detect hate speech in three areas. First, self-supervision. We're using the ability to train on data sets that don't have to be manually curated. This allows us to train on massively more data and learn a lot more nuance from it. Cross-lingual understanding. We have the ability now to build classifiers that understand the same concept in multiple languages. And learning in one language can improve its performance in others. This is particularly useful for languages that are less common on the internet. And the third area is whole post or multimodal understanding. This is the ability to train not just on text or images in isolation, but the ability to pull all of them together to understand the post as a whole. This technology is now used at scale to analyze content. I want to acknowledge how important it is that we work together as an industry to take an open approach on discussing and handling integrity issues on our platforms. We launched technical industry efforts like PyTorch, now one of the most popular deep learning frameworks on the market, along with a deepfake detection challenge that resulted in 2,000 teams from all over the world participating to find a better way to detect deepfakes automatically. We committed to open sourcing the tools as a result. Today, we're open sourcing the first ever hateful memes dataset for an industry-wide challenge to tackle hate. The hateful memes dataset will consist of more than 10,000 newly created examples of this hateful multimodal content. By providing a dataset expressly made to help researchers tackle the problem, along with a benchmark, community participation, we are confident that the hateful memes challenge will spur faster progress across the industry in dealing with hateful content and help advance multimodal machine learning more broadly. Of course, AI isn't our only answer to harmful content, but it is enabling us to adapt and scale more quickly, broadly, and effectively to address these challenges as we work to provide the safest communication platform possible. I will now turn the call over to Monica.
Thanks, Shrep, and hello, everyone. I want to start by expanding upon the COVID-19 updates and protections that Mark mentioned around our policies. We have longstanding policies against content that could contribute to real-world harm, but anytime that we're seeing new trends in abusive speech or behavior, we want to make sure that our teams are ready to apply those existing policies, including our ads policies, to those new trends as well. Now, Mark talked a little bit about how we've applied our policies to exploitative commercial content, like sales of hand sanitizer and face masks. It also means that in the context of COVID-19, we've been applying our policy against the coordination of physical harm to remove posts that advocate for the spread of the virus. We're applying our policies against bullying and harassment to remove claims that a private individual has the virus. And we're also applying our policy against misinformation that contributes to the risk of imminent physical harm to take down misinformation that could indeed contribute to the spread of the virus, such as false claims about cures, treatments, the availability of essential services, or the location and the severity of the outbreak. To date, we've removed hundreds of thousands of pieces of misinformation that could have contributed to the risk of imminent physical harm. And as the situation evolves, we'll continue to stay on top of trends and engage with experts like the World Health Organization and other governmental health authorities, and we will provide additional guidance where appropriate. I should also note that this adaptation of our policies to apply existing policies to new types of abuse, that's not new. That's something that we do regularly, just in the COVID-19 context. One metric that I want to call out from the report is the upper limit on prevalence for terrorism on Instagram, which we've estimated at 0.07% in Q1. This was not because of a spike in terrorist content on Instagram. Rather, it was because of the way that we enforced on content related to the death of Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani. Following Soleimani's death in January 2020, we saw a fair amount of content on Instagram that was posted in praise and support of him and of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. We removed the support of Soleimani and the IRGC in line with our obligations to adhere to U.S. sanctions law, which do apply to the IRGC and its leadership. However, we left on site posts that referenced Soleimani positively, but that stopped short of endorsing his activity or the activity of the IRGC. And even though we left this latter category of content on the site, the content is still reflected in the prevalence metric we're sharing today because of the general standards that we use find violations for this category. Lastly, in addition to the Community Standard Enforcement Report, today we release our biannual Government Request Report, which details the numbers of government requests for user data, content restrictions based on local law. We're also releasing the findings of three human rights impact assessments that we commissioned on the role of our services in Sri Lanka, Indonesia, Cambodia. I hope that you'll take a moment to look at both of these releases. We are very proud of the work that they represent and the continued commitment to transparency that they demonstrate. And with that, I'll now turn the call over to Vishal.
Thanks, Monica. It's been 6 months since we introduced Instagram metrics to this report. At first, we shared five policy areas: child nudity and sexual exploitation, drug sales, firearm sales, suicide and self-injury, and terrorist propaganda. Today, we're reporting our progress in those areas, and as Guy mentioned, we're introducing five more areas. In addition, we're sharing metrics on appeals made to us and decisions we overturn based on those appeals. I'm proud of these new additions and the progress we've made when it comes to keeping people safe on Instagram. In particular, I want to call out improvements to our machine learning and media matching technologies. These technologies allow us to find and remove content that is identical or nearly identical to existing violations in our databases. We focused heavily on this area and seen a marked improvement in our metrics as a result. On content related to suicide and self-injury, following improvements I mentioned to our media matching capabilities, we increased our proactive detection rate to almost 90% in Q1, an improvement of more than 12 points since the last report. The volume of content we actioned increased by 40% as a result. Like Facebook, we were also able to detect and take down more child nudity and sexually exploitative content in Q1, with a 53% increase in content action to over 1 million pieces of content. We still have work to do here, but as always, child safety remains an utmost priority for us. Elsewhere, we remain committed to leading the industry in the fight against online bullying. And in both Q4 of 2019 and Q1 of 2020, we took action on 1.5 million pieces of content. Today, we're announcing a number of new features to further our work here. These include giving people the option to remove multiple negative comments or blocking multiple people at once, allowing people to pin positive comments to set the tone for their accounts, and giving people more control over who can tag and mention their account. Please see the Instagram Press Center for more information on each of these features. Thanks for listening, everyone. We hope these metrics across our services demonstrate our continued concerted effort to keep people safe. And I'll now open the floor for questions.
Operator, can you instruct the participants on the call on how to ask a question?
We will now open the line for questions. To ask a question, press star followed by the number one. Your first question comes from the line of Danielle Abril from Fortune.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the call today. I had a quick question on hate speech. I know that you guys mentioned that your systems got a lot better at detecting hate speech, but I wondered, since the coronavirus outbreak, how much have you seen any increase around that or perhaps even the political environment around the coronavirus? Basically, have you seen any change in behavior as to what you're actually seeing on the platform? Thanks.
Hey, this is Guy. Thanks for the question. So this report goes through March, so it's probably still too early to assess the full impact of that. You do see an increase in our content actions and hate speech for Q1. That's mostly driven by improvements in our proactive detection technology. We're definitely monitoring, continuing to look closely at how the COVID pandemic is impacting these kind of trends on our platform. And I think in the next report, we hope to have more to share.
Your next question comes from Izzy Lepowski from Protocol. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. My question, I think this might be most appropriate for Monica, but you guys can tell me. As you have shifted to having full-time staffers moderating some of these most serious violations, which is a job I imagine isn't part of their typical set of responsibilities, can you share what their experience has been like, what sort of feedback you've gotten from them, and how, if at all, it has changed your outlook and yours on what the job of moderators entails and what sort of resources they need? Thank you.
Sure. I should say that some of the people who are reviewing content who are full-time employees have been doing that job in the past, and some of them have had to be intimately aware of the details of how to do that work because of the nature of their jobs. So what we've done to make sure they're ready to review content is make sure we're going through with them all the different ways that the content can manifest itself on our platform and why we have the policies that we do, and then just make sure that we're with them every step of the way, making sure they have the resources that they need. Like Mark mentioned, we are using a mix of both the full-time employees and some of our contractors, just like we always have. Of course, it's different now, but we're still using that mix of full-time employees and contractors in the office work voluntarily and at home work to make sure that we are keeping our community safe.
Your next question comes from Queenie Wong from CNET. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking the time to answer my question. You talked about how AI has helped you proactively detect content that could possibly violate your rules. Are your human reviewers doing anything new to proactively detect content that could be slipping through the cracks, like searching through the social network for coronavirus misinformation or looking through like private and public groups? Or do these reviewers mainly rely on content being brought to them either through like the AI system or user reports?
Hey, this is Guy. Thanks for the question. It's always been a combination of people and the technology. And the reviewers, there's several sources for the kinds of things that they may be reviewing. One of them is posts that are reported by people in the community. Another one is posts that are flagged by our proactive detection. And in some cases, the AI is at a point where it wants a human to take a look before we make the final decision. It might not be confident enough to actually remove the content independently. But we also have processes where through a combination of tools, AI tools and others, we are sort of searching, sweeping the site as it were, trying to find different kinds of content that may violate. If you think about what our proactive detection technology does, it's really trying to locate content that might violate our standards, whether that's posted, you know, by individuals or on a page or in a group and so forth. So we use all of those sources, and the humans will work in tandem with those tools in order to try to find that content and take down the content that is violating.
Your next question comes from the line of Casey Newton from The Verge. Please go ahead.
Hi. So I had a question about industry collaboration. Over the past week, we saw the Plandemic video go viral, and it appears that it got a lot of attention in Facebook groups that then drove millions of views on YouTube. And I wondered if you all could ever envision a time when you informed other platforms about seeing those kind of huge spikes in traffic to external sites that might be suggestive of bad actors organizing.
Hi, this is Monica. Thanks for the question. We actually do work quite a bit across industry to make sure that we are sharing best.
Hey, Monica, I think you might have muted yourself.
While Monica dials back in to answer that question, why don't we go ahead and take the next question and then we can come back to her.
Your next question comes from the line of Manuel Machado from Observador. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you thanks again for taking my question. I've been reading this transparency report, but I could not find information regarding revenues. Has Facebook revenue grew since the start of the pandemic? If not, by how much has it reduced? If yes, by how much it grew and from which revenues? I think the best person for this question is Mark.
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand the question. Are you asking about our financials? I mean, we typically report in our quarterly earnings. Are you asking about something specific related to how we do content moderation, or can you clarify that?
Sorry, I was not. If I did not clarify the question, I know you asked, you show that on the report, on the quarterly report, but specifically this transparency report, we wanted to know if the revenue grew or not since the start of the pandemic, since this is also about transparency and can show how Facebook is going.
I think the only data that we're going to share on our financials is what we share in earnings, which I think was just a few weeks back, and we both shared at the time data from the first quarter in our financials. And our CFO, Dave Wehner, gave some forward-looking statements on what we expect the outlook to be going forward.
Okay, thank you.
And I think we have Monica back if we want to jump back to the question about industry collaboration. Monica, are you there?
Okay, I'm here. Let's try this again. Sorry, I'm not sure what happened there. But yes, we actually do have regular calls and meetings with industry, and we collaborate very broadly across different areas of content policy. And we've done that for years, and we're doing that now around COVID-19 as well. That does include sometimes flagging for one another when we see specific pieces of content that might be gaining attention either in the news or on our services. Now, of course, each platform has different rules, and so we each make our decisions independently. With the video that you mentioned, the pandemic video, that video included a bunch of conspiracy theories, including the claim that wearing a mask could activate your own coronavirus and make you sick. We actually, because that video does violate our policies, we did remove that. And we are also seeing people try to post that video again, and we're doing our best to identify copies of that video and remove it as well.
Your next question comes from the line of Carissa Bell from Engadget.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. At the beginning of the call, Mark mentioned prioritizing certain types of content right now, including content that can cause harm. And I'm curious if content that promotes anti-vaccination conspiracy theories or other types of misinformation about vaccines is being prioritized right now, given the links we've seen between accounts that share this and also sharing misinformation about COVID and conspiracy theories and the pandemic video that was just mentioned.
Hey, this is Guy. We're generally, as Mark said, we're trying to prioritize a number of areas that are around sort of real world offline harm. But it's not that we're not getting to other areas. This is just a question of sort of the mix and how what are the things that our more limited review workforce is trying to get to. Definitely anything in and around and related to COVID-related and sort of health-related harms is something that's very much top of mind and very much something that we want to prioritize, obviously because of the importance that it has during this time, during the pandemic.
Your next question comes from the line of Sarah Fryer from Bloomberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I know that you spoke earlier in this call about how just the resources of human moderators right now have been restricted because of coronavirus. And as we've seen the virus continue, and it may be more of a long-term thing than a short-term blip, are you actually considering hiring more human moderators to pick up the slack and cover these categories that you can't pay attention to right now? And I'm also curious, when users report, are you relying less on user reports as you transition more to AI, or are those reports from Facebook and Instagram users still all being reviewed by humans? Thank you.
Hey, this is Guy. Thanks for the question. For clarity, we're in the process of bringing the review workforce back online. So we sent everyone home in order to take care of their health and the health of their communities. But as we did that, we worked with our partners to ensure that those reviewers could also get online and be able to work from home. A majority of our reviewers now are actually able to work from home. So we have them in addition to the full-time employees who are also working from home, but there's obviously slight differences in what that sort of work is like. And so we're working hard to make sure that we're prioritizing things in the right way. We're providing the right resources and support to anyone who is doing this kind of work. On the second part of your question around reports, so there is right now, there is a sort of screen that pops up when people try to report that does note that we are not going to be able to get to all reports right now due to the pandemic and due to the reduced workforce. As we bring everyone back online and get all of the systems that are working again at capacity, we hope to get back to be able to looking through all of those user reports as well. But we will be able to, we will be prioritizing the ones that are, for example, the most harmful or the most prevalent in order to get to the most problematic content that has the most impact on people who use our services.
Your next question comes from the line of David Alba from the New York Times. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my question. Not to hammer on the pandemic video so much, but I just wanted to be, to ask more precisely. I know that your response has been to take down the video because it has wrong information about masks. We've also seen that people are re-uploading the video, cutting out that part. And so does that violate your guidelines or is that allowed on Facebook?
Hi, this is Monica. Thanks for the question. If there were a number of different parts of that video that could be fact by our fact checkers. So if people are sharing a clip of the video that has the mask claim in it, that violates our policy against sharing misinformation that could contribute to the imminent, to the risk of imminent physical harm. So that we will remove. If they're sharing it and it has other parts of the video, but not the mask claim, then it's eligible for our third-party fact checkers to fact check that. And if they do rate it, if the fact checkers do rate it as false, then we label it on our platform and we reduce its distribution.
Great. And operator, we have time for one more question.
Your last question comes from the line of Zoe Thomas from CBC News. Please go ahead.
Thank you guys for doing this. Just to go back to the AI a bit, you've made this big shift into using AI as moderators that you've been kind of doing for some time, but do you think the uptick in using AI now as moderators will mean long-term you're limiting how many human moderators you're using to look at content?
Hey, this is Guy. So we'll continue to learn from how we're leaning more into automation during this crisis, but people are going to remain critical to this work. We can use automated removal when the technology is very confident that a post violates our policies, but often we need those teams to be working hand in hand. And even in order to build up and train AI, we need to have content manually reviewed by reviewers because that's what actually goes into what what's called the training data that helps that AI become effective. So yes, there has been a lot of progress and a lot of content is detected by technology. And I think this work over the past years has really helped us respond during this very unprecedented time. But the humans are going to continue to be a really important part of the equation, both the people who report content to us, but also the people on our review teams who are part of keeping people safe on our platform.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for joining our call today. And if you have any follow-up questions, you know how to reach our team or you can reach out at press@fb.com. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
This concludes the Facebook press call. Thank you for joining. You may now disconnect your lines.